See? It's not so bad.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us for the Morning Open, a look at the economy as markets get to trading for the day. We're about 20 minutes in, so let's ask, where's Wall Street? Right now, the S&P up about 0.75%, the NASDAQ up 0.8%, and the Dow up about 0.2%. Hey, about 65 points at 97.91. Shares in Europe are higher as well, 0.5% to 1.5%, and in Asia, stocks closed in positive territory today as well. We got some economic data this morning, some retail sales numbers and initial jobless claims for last week. We're going to get some analysis this morning from Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial. She joins us live from Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
So these retail numbers are out this morning. Limited Brands surprised us with some small sales increases. Children's Place as well. Next week we get government data on retail. Do your best, Karnak, and tell us how this bodes for holiday sales.
Well, it's not clear that this is great for holiday sales. What we are seeing is the consumer dip their toe back into the water after really being in shock a year ago. The year-over-year comparisons, remember, this was post-Lehman now, was when the entire world panicked and shut down. And so we are seeing some move back in. Also, it's important to note that many of the retailers that did well did heavy discounting. Macy's has become, a competitor to Walmart now in terms of how many promotions they're doing out there. So there still is the move for value. The high end still struggling quite a bit. We're seeing that movement, not really a burst in activity, but
yeah,
at this stage of the game, anything that's less bad is now
right,
good news.
Right. I want to talk about jobless numbers quickly. They fell more than expected last week, the initial claims. Lowest level since January. Tell me, is this a fluke?
I hope not. 1 week does not make a trend, but we certainly can hope that the trend is in the right direction towards. We know private employment is moving towards zero now rather than negative. It's the state and local sector that we're starting to see increases in unemployment there and more layoffs. So we're hoping to see a turn in employment by December, January, but it's still going to be a very modest turn. These are still very high jobless claim numbers.
Diane Swonk, thanks for joining us from Chicago this morning.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. The Justice Department is in the early stages of an investigation into alleged unfair business practices over at IBM's mainframe computer market. Competitors have complained that Big Blue's illegally bundling software and hardware. Justice is also expected to look at this Ticketmaster and Live Nation merger later, but regulators in Britain apparently aren't too happy with that deal right now. Let's talk with Alistair Gray, who had a story this morning in the Financial Times. He joins us live from London. Hi there.
Hi.
So what were British regulators looking at?
Okay, so the Competition Commission, that's the UK competition watchdog, has found itself ruling on two US companies, which is somewhat unusual. But they're not happy with the situation. They say that the combined group could lead to higher prices and poorer services for consumers and stifle innovation in the market. Now, there's different things that they can do, but this is only a provisional ruling, and the final findings are due out next month.
So what can they do? Can they stop this merger?
The answer to that is essentially no. What they can do, because they're clearly confined to the UK market, is they can force they can say to these companies, look, you're going to have to dispose, one of you is going to have to dispose of your UK division. That's what lawyers call a structural remedy. Or they can say, they can take a so-called behavioural remedy, which is essentially telling these companies you have to sell the tickets through a rival. The rival's called a CTS, which wants to gain access to the market. Lawyers say that that they prefer the regulators prefer the structural remedy because it's easier to implement. But clearly, these companies don't want to sell; that have to get rid of their UK divisions.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. We shall see how this sort of moves forward. Alistair Gray from the Financial Times in London. Thanks.
Thanks.
Listening to the Morning Report for Thursday, October 8th, 2009, at marketplace.org. A British workers' rights group is calling for a flat minimum wage across Asia. The demand caps years of study by the group Labor Behind the Label. Researchers found that garment workers in Asia who produce the clothes we buy aren't making near enough to live. Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
Labor Behind the Label has come up with a floor wage that is twice what Indonesian laborers get. It's three times the minimum rate of pay in Sri Lanka and more than six times the wage in Bangladesh. Anna McMullen wrote the report. She says the countries may be different, but the best protection for workers is a minimum wage that crosses borders.
There's a race to the bottom between different countries to set lower minimum wages in order to attract foreign business. So the minimum wage levels that are set are well below what is necessary for a decent quality of life.
The wage was calculated based on the cost of food, water, shelter, healthcare, and education. Mark Brenner is the director of Labor Notes. He says big Western companies often dodge the issue of how much the people who make their products are paid.
Big companies like Walmart have always thrown up their hands and said, hey, you know, we can't do this. We don't actually hire these workers. It's our suppliers.
Brenner says a single floor wage could force Western companies to take responsibility. They'll know what a living wage is, and they'll come under pressure to abide by the same rules. He says if the cost is passed on to consumers, it'll probably only add up to a buck or two on a $50 pair of shoes. I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Later today, the House Financial Services Committee looks into the health of the Federal Housing Administration. The FHA guarantees the mortgages of millions of homeowners, but delinquencies and defaults are rising, and the agency's cash reserves are falling. That has some in Congress worried about another potential bailout. Marketplace's Steve Henn has more.
3 years ago, the Federal Housing Administration guaranteed less than 3% of mortgages in America. By last December, it made half of all home purchases possible. But
there has to be some tighter control of the risk that's there.
Lisa Jackson follows the FHA for John Burns Consulting. She says recently its losses have been mounting and capital reserves are sinking below minimums set by Congress. Brian Chappell at Potomac Partners says the FHA can weather this storm.
They have roughly $30 billion in these accounts right now.
More than enough to pay for any expected defaults for at least 4 years. But Chappell worries if Congress asks the FHA to tighten its lending standards, the agency will pull back.
And if FHA is not there to step in times like these, who else is going to do it?
Chappell says right now, FHA-guaranteed loans are one of the only pillars still propping up the housing market. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
We heard about retail sales, of course. We're already hearing about the prospect of gloomy holiday sales. Given all that, you might think the retail industry might have its work cut out to attract new talent to its ranks. Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
It turns out the shrinking financial industry is good for retailers. Bert Flickinger runs consulting firm Strategic Resource Group. He says MBAs who'd normally go straight into investment banks are rethinking their options.
And are actively and aggressively pursuing jobs to go into management and executive training programs with leading retailers both in the U.S. and worldwide.
Flickinger says all those bankruptcies and buyouts in the retail world mean those companies need more MBAs to do merger and acquisition work. And he says retailers worried about the future got rid of too many people.
Even if the well-capitalized retailers laid off too much top talent, so the retailers don't have enough bench strength for this consolidation and expansion.
So he says retailers need business school grads to refill their ranks and start the climb to the executive suite. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
We've been getting data lately that's showing the economy slowly crawling out of the cellar. But despite lackluster signs, some financial prognosticators say once a recovery does take hold, it'll be a really strong one. We brought in economics correspondent Chris Farrell to talk to us about it. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
So how can anyone come to this conclusion given all the data that we have?
Last year, corporate CEOs believed we might go into a depression. So they purged their workforce, they slashed that inventory, they put a halt to all capital spending plans. Well, things are starting to get a little bit better. So they're starting to make phone calls. We got to rebuild our inventory. We have to invest in new technologies. And by the way, we're going to work our people harder. Reversing the purge is going to be a bigger than expected boost to the economy.
I can't help but still be a skeptic, though, Chris. You know, when I read the data about, like, hours worked, you know, we're seeing hours worked at, like, 33 hours a week or something like that, and it keeps going down. I mean, how could that be the precursor to a strong recovery?
Oh, and but let me come back to you with a counterargument.
All right.
If you look at the previous 9 downturns in our economy, the recoveries have always been stronger than expected. Well, we just went through the longest, deepest downturn since the 1930s. You know what I say? I think history is going to repeat itself.
I can't help but think inflation is going to be a problem, Chris. You have the price of gold surging and the dollar keeps taking hit after hit. I mean, that can't bode well, can it?
Inflation? What inflation? There is no inflation out there. There's not enough demand. I mean, you know what? This gold, it's a bubble. It's got all the signs of a bubble. Take a look at all the institutional money that all of a sudden that said, oh, we would never invest in gold. All of a sudden, they're piling in the gold. Tell you what, 3 months from now, let's talk about gold, because I have a feeling we're going to be talking about a boom-bust cycle.
And this is still a minority position, right?
Oh, this is absolutely a minority position. I mean, look, the consensus has a lot of strength behind it, just as you mentioned, your skepticism. But we know that the consensus is always wrong. Right? It always is. So I'm hoping that the consensus is wrong and that we get a stronger than expected recovery, because what's the alternative? We get another downturn.
Economics correspondent Chris Farrell with us this morning. Chris, thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Join us online and share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.